Hey lovelies, so a little bit of information on the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge. This was a challenge started for disabled people, for disabled filmmakers, disabled producers, disabled writers, disabled actors, to all make a film in 5 days' time. It's free to register, anyone can participate. I've been lucky enough to be part of this wonderful program since 2019. And I would highly recommend doing it. It's really fun. The competition is laid back. You meet some amazing people like you're going to hear on this podcast. I would highly recommend being a part of it. Visit disabilityfilmchallenge.com for more information.
A person in a manual wheelchair, or like when I was talking to Lola, look, Lolo, it's just like the representation is not accurate. And we can tell if a person's not actually disabled. You know, with Kira Allen in Run, that's why it was so revolutionary, because she is actually a wheelchair user and that's how her body works. But that's what turned me on to Crutches and Spies. I saw your photo shoot where you had your crutches and I'm like, yes, that's the representation I want to see, because unfortunately disabled wheelchair users don't represent me. They don't, because that's not how I look. That's not how I move.
I think one of the issues is that ableist society sees disability as a binary, you know, or like it's either abled or not, you know, you're either standing or you're in a wheelchair, and there's so many things in between that we never really validate as a society. And so when we see disability, that their only thought of representation is somebody in a wheelchair, there's nothing wrong with that. However, there is so much diversity within the disability community that it just never gets to be seen. And even with, I think one of the big representations is Ryan Hadid on The Politician, who uses a walker. And that's pretty cool, because it's like, you never see somebody with a walker. I got a walker as a child, he's the exact same one. And so for any young child who is a walker now, they could look, technically they should not be watching the show if they're a child. But, you know, like having a walker user in a TV show is like, oh, cool, that's what I walk with, like that's cool,
yeah.
Like, that's myself, you know. So I think that like able society needs to get away from this, like either you're walking or in a wheelchair, there's so many things in between.
I interviewed Ryan this last week on my Wednesday show that I do, and that's one of the things that we mentioned. I just have a real problem with the ableism, yes, but also the lack of diversity of people of color with a disability. Like, we look at disability through a very white lens, either through policy or media, and it's like, you know, I've been hustling my butt before I went to DC for like 10 years. In right after high school, I was like, I want to be an actor. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to act. This is what I'm going to try to accomplish. And when I tried to audition, people were like, "This, you're too much. You're too like," and they'd be like, "You're too ethnic, or you're too your lifestyle's too diverse." Like, they use those terms in the casting room. Or like they used to cast saying ethnically ambiguous, which basically means, can you pull off white? but they don't say that anymore. Like, they're getting better and saying now Hispanic, now, you know, Asian American, now African American or Black. So that's better, but now the parts for LGBTQ and disabled are still predominantly white. And so when I made my film Extra Special, I'm friends with Ryan, and I was very nervous to make it, but he liked it. We talked about it after, because I'm about, you know, apologizing after before instead of asking permission. So we talked about it afterwards, and he's like, no, it's fine, because it's it's true. Like, people hear about one CP actor with a disability and they assume, oh, that's just the one guy. Meanwhile, you know, all my friends know in the industry that I've been hustling myself out for like over a decade, and they're like, wow, Andy, you're really talented. Like, my film this time around, I've entered the Disability Film Challenge 3 times, and my film this time around, everyone's like, I never knew you were that talented. And although that's a really horrible compliment, I guess, because they know I've been around for like over 10 years. So I'm like, thanks. But like, are you seeing me now because you want to see me, or because society's telling you to see me now? So that's like the question that's going on in my head right now. Like, thank you, but why now, right? So.
Baby, I'm gonna say you are always extra special and fabulous, and I love having you as a co-host, and you always, you know, talk about this idea, and it's exactly right. And I just want to say, like, I mean, I love being part of the Unicorn Closet, but I definitely have a lot to learn from these filmmakers and these editors and these people who've been doing it a long time, because I make videos, but I don't do it to the level that y'all do, and you should all be very proud.
Well, I was going to say too that one of the reasons that, like, we need more representation in front of the camera, but also behind it, in terms of like racially diverse disabled people too, because there are stories that white people in the disability community just can't tell. Like, there's just some stories that you just cannot tell at all. And being disabled is great, but it's not enough to tell some of the ethnically diverse stories that we need as a community, and especially as Black and Brown people. I'll speak for myself as a Black girl with a disability. You know, the representation for my community is very, very slim. And so when I wanted to get into entertainment, I was very discouraged because there was nobody that looked like me. And every single time that I tried to do anything, you know, they were like, oh, well, people won't believe you if you're disabled and Black, because there's no Black disabled people. I'm like, what the hell are you all talking about?
You heard that too? Oh my God.
Because like, when you look at the statistics, okay, I'm going to go back to the statistics. The statistics say that we are overwhelmed, like Blackness and disability go hand in hand in this society. So does Indigenous identity and disability, and so does any sort of marginalized identity racially, has a high amount of people with disabilities in that racial category because of the systems we inhabit. So anyways, I'm getting too much of my thoughts. But you know, when we talk about racial diversity in entertainment, like, we really need to represent Black people with disabilities and Black women, especially with disabilities, because our stories are going unheard. And even though people think it's not a big deal, when we go into a hospital room and our doctor has seen TV and film with Black disabled women in it, and we're talking about the death rate of Black disabled women in the medical field, that matters, that they saw somebody who looks like me on screen, so that when they see me before them, they at least know a little bit more how to interact with me. Or they don't have to gaslight me about my symptoms, because we have more representation in film and TV. And I think that people think that these things are separate. They're not. They all go hand in hand. What we see on TV is supposed to be a reflection of society. And when we miss the mark, we affect people who have to live in the real world.
Amen.
Also a doctor that talks about Black medical bias. And Lolo and I were talking about that. And you're exactly right. If we don't see correct medical representation, you know, in diverse communities, we're never going to see it. I'm sorry, Andy. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I thought Zach wanted to say something. But just real quick to your point, you know, people, I've been told, like, we've never seen a gay Latin disabled person before. And even though I'm like skin Latin, like, you put me next to a white person, you can certainly tell that I am not white. And so people were like, they told me, like, I don't know what we're gonna do with that. Like, I've been told straight out, like, that's not for mainstream, and do other things with your career. Hence, I took a job in policy for like 4 years because I didn't want to be poor. But I mean, that's, you know, it's so pervasive that either we're super tokenized or that we're marginalized to the point where, like, we have to either play up our disability, play down our ethnicity. And if you want me to play straight, fine, give me enough money and I can do it. I don't have a problem with that. But I have a problem with playing white, and I have a problem playing more disabled. Like, those are my two problems. Other than that, I can make out with someone who's not male. That's fine. You just got to pay me enough money to do it.
But what I'm hearing, and what I really like this conversation, is that it's so important for people of all backgrounds, abilities, ethnicities, to see somebody on mainstream TV or movies that is like them. That's what we need to see more of. And I know me personally, I've always loved the entertainment business, but I didn't believe that there was a place for me in it because I never saw anybody like me. And that's why I studied to be a teacher. So everybody that's kind of on this call is a bit of an anomaly in that society and mainstream TV has kind of showed us over and over again that there's not a place for you. We don't have any, nobody's giving people these roles on TV. So how did you all kind of push past that and into entertainment anyway, even though you've been told no?
Sorry, Monique, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Sam. What I was gonna say is, like, I wanna push back on what you said is, like, there, you know, entertainment and film and TV has shown us that there's no place for us. And I think that it has, it's shown that there's a place for us. They just don't want us physically. Like, if you think about the ways in which, like, people are cast to be play disabled characters, and they're more likely to win an award for playing a disabled character than a disabled person is likely to be cast for that role, it's showing us that they want disability stories. They just don't want our physicality or our bodies for it. And so we know for a fact that they're successful. We know that for a fact that people resonate with these stories. We know that people want them and demand them. They just don't want to take the leap of actually hiring us. Because one of the things that I see that's a difference between, you know, building ethnically diverse stories and disabled stories is, you know, they just have to, for, and I know it's, there's a lot of things that go behind the scenes, but when it comes to casting Black and brown people, a lot of times it's them overcoming their own biases and opening the door. For us, it's, you need accommodations. You need to have, like, an elastic work schedule. You need to make sure that our needs are met as disabled cast members, and they don't want to take that leap. And they think that we're more of a responsibility than other actors, when in reality, all the things that they should be providing us as workers, literal workers, are required by law. And so, when we talk about this, we have to think about the fact that, like, we know our stories are successful. We know they resonate with people. They have to take the leap and get on board with us. Because I'm no longer waiting for these people to say to us, oh, you're worthy. I know I'm worthy. You don't know I'm worthy.
Baby, yes.
So, Samantha, before you go, I want to say something because a lot of people don't know this. And I've said it before on this specific platform, the ADA does not cover sets in Hollywood because they are closed sets. So we are not covered under the same work protection rights as a regular workplace because it's just not the same. They're closed sets. They pick who they want to pick. They could be as racist or discriminatory as they choose to be, and it's been up to us now as individuals with disabilities to break open those doors. That's the unfortunate piece, that the industry is run by money and politics, and that money and politics has not seen the value in hiring us as storytellers or as actors or as producers or as directors. Let me tell you, if I got a job as a showrunner for a TV show or an executive producer for any show, I would be like, hey, we're hiring all my friends. We're like putting it out there. But that's the problem, is there are no people in power with disabilities that are working at Warner Brothers or Netflix, or there are like one or two, but that one or two isn't going to make an impact on the entire industry, right? So, I mean, I just want to make that clear, because a lot of people think, oh, they need to be accessible like every other job, and they're not, studios are not bound by ADA laws like other workplaces.
Well, and the thing, so Andy and I, we did a conversation with Tatiana Lee, the model and actress, and for Tawn Banks, who's working on Fox 911, right, Andy? And we kind of talked about this idea of sets, you know, not being accommodating to people with disabilities. And one of the things I love that Tatiana said, it's like, Hollywood is just starting to get used to white disabled people. I mean, we love Ally Stoker in the Lifetime movie and we get it, but like, it's 2021. We should be way more advanced as a society. Another thing, you know, that Imani brought up that's an excellent point is that we play into these sad narratives. We want to see people like Bryan Cranston, you know, being a quadriplegic, but it's like, why the heck does he have to be in it? Why can't you just hire somebody who actually has a disability? With Me Before You, that story was so wrong, because you're saying the main character chooses death? That's through an able-bodied lens. That's not through a disabled lens. Hollywood wants to tell disabled stories as long as it's through an able-bodied, like, inspiration porn lens.
And I want to also bring up, like, the fact for invisible disabilities, because Imani brought up the fact that, disabilities are a spectrum, and they are. And when I got diagnosed with one of my invisible disabilities, I was so upset. And I said to my doctor, I'm sorry, I don't know what this looks like for me. I guess it's because I don't see myself see this in the media or anything. And my doctor said, oh, you know, there's representation in the media. Have you seen the RA commercials, the Humira commercials? And I was like, that's my representation, I guess, the Humira commercials at 1 a.m. in the morning when I'm sitting up in pain. So yeah, that's my representation, I guess. So I just kind of want to bring that up, that there's not much representation for us. We kind of look at those medicine commercials, we see ourselves in that, and we need to bring more of a spectrum to the industry and to the media and see ourselves in films. And so I just wanted to, when Imani was saying that, I thought of that and I was like, oh my God, that's depressing. And that's not me at all. I'm not that. I'm like, I have capabilities. I have like way more than just a Humira commercial for like myself, for what I see myself and for my future. And to Imani's point, like, again, I can't tell Imani's story. Like, I have a way different experience than hers, and I'm never going to experience the things that she's going to experience. And so like, it's really important that we recognize that and that we advocate for each other, because we all have different things that we can bring to the table and that we need to bring to the table, that we need to tell, because we need to be able to ensure that our like disabled community like can see that there's more than just a Humira commercial to aspire to.
That diabetes commercial, I'm like, do you understand, you know, the demographics of people who are dealing with diabetes? And a lot of disabled people with diabetes can't even afford that thing that he was advertising. And I'm like, I get it. It's great that you have a big star like Nick Jonas, you know, helping the disabled community. But again, it's like, I just don't think it's good representation if nobody in the disabled community can afford it. Like, real talk.
To go off of what Sam said, I think that, you know, in talking about what we wanted our story to be about, she and I both deal with invisible illnesses. And we kind of settled on, well, something that helped us kind of change our mindsets on things were our histories with mental health and going through therapy. So, I mean, Sam, the story is based on real life stories that have happened and real situations, but that's what we wanted represented was real couples, not only just having disabilities and maybe not acknowledging that, and maybe acknowledging that like there's something else going on with these people. They're entitled to have disagreements with their spouses and partners. Everybody has issues. So even if it's just that, I feel like mental health is one of those a little bit more well known of the invisible illnesses, aside from, you know, diabetes and some of the really more popular ones. Mental health is kind of that in between, I think, of the world between non-disabled and disabled, where like everybody has those issues. And if we didn't have to talk about everybody being physically disabled or invisibly, and we just did it, that's what we ended up with. And I'm really happy with what our team came up with this year.
Well, I think that's an important point is like, I believe wholeheartedly that the best artists have something to say. You can be talented, you can be skilled, you can do all of those things. But if you don't have anything important to say, at the end of the day, it's just white noise. So all of the people in this group, I believe from what I see, have something to say and have something important to say. So I just wanna ask kind of a fun question, which is like, if there is one thing that you could say with your career, you know, what would it be? It could be about disability or not.
Could you just repeat that? I'm sorry. There's construction.
Yeah, no problem. If there was one thing that you could say with your career, you know, what's the one thing that you want people to take away when your career is all over? And I would love for everybody to answer this. Imani, Andy, Samantha, I'd love to hear your answers.
Yeah, I think the one thing I want to say is I'm here, like I'm right here. And I think that like, and I'm here in my fullness and not in any sort of, I'm not going to twist myself into what you think I'm going to be. I'm here as I am. And I think also I kind of want to show like disability is badass, but like also, yeah. I also like really want to celebrate the disability community and everything I write, like not just myself, not just one disabled character, like every time I think about a film or a TV idea, I think about the interconnectivity of disability itself and how often and heavily we rely on each other for our survival. And that's the stories that I want to tell. And I want to show us like, you know, kind of as we are, which is like in the shadows, but also just so powerful in ways that people have yet to measure or even imagine. So that's kind of what I want to say with my work.
I have to add on because I love her so much. And I know that we haven't really talked a lot about disability pride, but I would really like to see in Hollywood a shift of how we view disability, because I understand when we want to develop a story that doesn't have anything to do with disability. Yes, wonderful, great. But I understand, like, if you're a disabled person and you're acting in a movie, you're essentially giving disabled representation. But with claiming disability, I'm about disability pride. Saying the word disabled is not a bad word. Acknowledging that a character is disabled is not bad. So I would really like to see that shift. And I know, because at Claiming Disability, there's a lot of disabled people on the spectrum. I was 30 years old until I became a person. You don't wake up disabled and fierce. You're not like, woo, I'm gonna take on the world today. You're like, that's not how it works. But, you know, disability pride is about acceptance. It's not about ignoring, you know, the bad days or the chronic pain days or whatever. It's about acceptance of disability. And disability isn't bad. And I think there's kind of a confusion in the community, like with Ali Stoker, if we acknowledge the disability that's somehow taking away from her humanity. Acknowledging disability does not take away from humanity, whether you identify as identity first language, disabled, powerful, pretty woman, or you identify as person first.
Well, and I 100% agree. I think that if you make a movie that's 90 minutes long with a disabled character at the center, and you don't bring up the disability, that's never going to be an authentic representation of disability.
Right.
Because our disability
weird.
Is like,
it's like we've gone 30 minutes and nobody's even brought it up. Like, they're not even like using a ramp or like, I'm just like, dude, no, you're missing the point. That's like everybody who treats us so awkwardly, like when we're disabled as hell and nobody talks about it. Like, I am disabled as fuck, but that doesn't have to be bad.
So I'm just gonna jump in, and I'm not defending that ideal, but a lot of things that us actors talk about is that if people without disabilities can play us, we can play roles that don't specifically focus on our disabilities. Like, if you wanna hire me as a serial killer or as a whatever, right? Like, and you wanna make me gay as Christmas, which I already am, please do that. And let's focus on my LGBTQ-ness, and let's focus on, you know, all of that other stuff. And oh, by the way, I'm sitting my ass in a wheelchair. Great, let's shoot the wheelchair, let's get it in. And you know, it starts the conversation. But like, I've always made it a point in my art to, I'm proud of my disability. I cannot put it in a pocket. I can't hide it, but I know that that's one part of who I am. Just like being gay is one part of who I am, and being Latino is one part of who I am. And my goal in my art is to marry all of those, and I don't want to use the N word as normal, but make it not a thing, right? Why can't there be a Latin gay disabled character on TV and people be like, my God, like, it's not there. We are not there. Ryan did his special show and everyone was like, this is so groundbreaking. And I'm like, sweetie, that's like a very white, like, way of looking at your world. And
oh,
I love
it. Yes.
But I was like, I, you know, my experiences were way different than yours. And I think, you know, I've talked about this with my friend Angela, and it's just different. But when people see it, then it'll just be. And so I don't want to be the trophy disabled. I don't want to be the trophy gay or Latino. I just want to be all of that intersectional goodness, and just be a good artist. Like, I want my art to speak for itself, right? And yeah, right now we have to shove it in people's faces because they don't see it. But eventually in my career, I want people just to see it and be like, that's cool. It's all good, you know?
I feel like my head is like gonna fall off because I'm nodding. Yeah, but like, I agree with you. That for me as a writer, that is the ultimate goal. Like, I, and as just a person, like, I want, and I think I'm speaking for myself and my experiences. I can't talk for the whole disabled community and for all the different, you know, little groups, but I can say for myself as a writer, I don't want to be, you know, restricted to one type of writing or one type of this. I want to be able to write what I want to write. If I want to write a piece about, you know, a Victorian tea party and have somebody who is disabled come to the tea party, I don't know, I'm not gonna write this because it sounds horrible. But if I wanna write it, I wanna be able to write it, and I don't wanna have to be restricted, and I wanna be creative and have fun with it. And that should be allowed because it'll be, you know, it'll be great. And I think the goal should be at the end of the day, and that's what I wanted to do with this piece that we did, is like, we should be able to have, you know, at the end of the day, seeing TV like this, that's like really cool, and everyone's like, this is awesome, and I relate to these characters. And like, for me, like, when I was talking with Mel, I was saying like, well, I'm not saying like we go to couples therapy, but with my boyfriend, like I'm not talking about like how I'm disabled all the time with my boyfriend. Like, I'm not saying like, this is a disabled relationship. Like I'm disabled. Like it was like, that's not realistic for us. Obviously it definitely comes up that I'm disabled and we have like arguments about that sometimes, like issues and like conflicts that come up, but like, it's not the focus. That's not the main focus of my character. Like I'm disabled. This is a dramatic issue all the time. And that's not like a realistic thing. Like, this would be a realistic argument that we would have, like that these couples have. So like, that's the kind of content that I want to make. I want to see characters that aren't always dramatizing disability all the time and making it like a sole focus. And so that's kind of what like the goal was to be like, this is a normal thing. These are like characters that we see every day that deal with normal things, if that right. makes sense, you know?
Oh yeah.
Have fun with it. And it's funny. And like, this is funny. Like everyone can enjoy this. And then when they see maybe, or they have a disabled friend, like they realize like, oh, this is a person too that like has problems like me. And like, maybe I can relate to them on that level too. That makes right. sense.
Oh yeah, I agree. In most of my films, the central plot is not disability related. Because I'm with you. I really believe that, we have to create characters that everyone can relate to. And it's such a weird line, right? Because we're treading new territory. I feel like everybody here is a groundbreaker and a disruptor. And I think that we're going to see more from everybody in this group in the future.
Also have narratives that explain things that people don't understand, because how else are we going exactly. to, you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
how
exactly.
else are we doing that, you know? So
I just want to be rich and have my wheelchair be on the side. Like, is that just what's wrong with that? Like, if people
there's
are like,
nothing wrong with it, but I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding, and I've said this even with the disabled community. There's a fundamental misunderstanding of what disability pride even is. Disability pride is not about like taking a story narrative and saying, I'm disabled, I'm disabled, I'm disabled. I just don't want us to ignore it and treat it like it's bad. It's not.
I don't think people treat it like it's bad. I mean, like, but that's what maybe disability pride means to you. And I think disability pride, like we should
no,
have
I
the right.
It's the actual definition. It's part of the reclaim movement. It was like the 1970s and
I've centered disability in my stories mainly because I like the idea of horrifying non-disabled people
right
in like in their behavior towards disabled people
yeah
but like that's, like and for me it's like I want to and I understand that there's a diversity in the ideas of like what disability representation should look like, and I think that we should all honor that
right
yeah. but also at the same time yeah. for me I really want to hold up a mirror, you know, so that so that people can understand like what we go through on a daily basis. And that's extremely important to me. And so like for other people that may not be like where they want their stories to go, and that has to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, like that's the point. Like we should honor like yeah. our freedoms to tell like what we want to tell. And that's like, that's for me, that's what pride is. Like, I think we all have to have the freedom to be able to like own our stories and be able to tell what we want to tell and to not be like in a box of like what that should be. That's like the beauty of it.
And also too, like if we demand disability representation looks any one certain way, we're really just doing it for the abled gaze. Like, if we're doing it essentially for the gratification of non-disabled people. So what I hope happens in entertainment is that disabled people are the people that are building the stories, not non-disabled people. And that one, we could hold up a mirror. Two, we could just be regular people. And three, we can be empowering to one another and build each other's networks up so that we can be in places of prominence and power so that we can hire one another and make sure that we are expanding the community. I don't think it has to be one or the other. Now, personally, I would probably lean more towards more disability representation that's loud, in your face, and angry. But I'm not everybody in the disability community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I shouldn't be the representation for everybody in the community. That's the whole point.
Exactly.
I want to clarify
my wheelchair regardless. Like, it's not that I'm not proud of my wheelchair. It's when I do stand up, I talk about sex, I talk about racism, I talk about all these things. The one thing I don't usually talk about is the fact that I'm sitting on freaking titanium, because you can already see that. And there's so many disabled comedians that disability is the only thing that they joke about. So I'm like, I'm going to flip the narrative and talk about really uncomfortable things like sex, because that's going to freak people out. And it does. And so I feel like my disability pride comes in the fact that, like, it's a part of me. And it's going to be a part of everyone's life. Mm-hmm. And period. Everyone's going to age into a disability. And as soon as we make it part of our culture instead of part of us versus them, then the pride thing will be universal. And we're not going to have to, like, make these movies that are, like, wheelchair, 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 or crutches, 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 or walker, walker, walker. Like, I mean, maybe I've been doing it for too long where I'm like, I've gone into a casting where they said to me, can you play more disabled? And all the people in wheelchairs.
Well, like, you're a cripple, baby, and you're disabled. Like,
No, they're like, can you put your arms like this? Can you?
Yeah, that's cripping up for disabled people.
You know, all people with disabilities, if you look at all the previous iterations, they've all exacerbated their disability on camera. The ones that were disabled, because that's what the able-bodied producers and directors wanted them to do. So that's probably why I'm not super famous, because I haven't done that. I've walked out of rooms and said, I won't do that for you.
You mean you're not Ryan O'Connell?
I want to clarify kind of my point just really quickly. When I say bring up disability, like the thing, like I'll use Andy's example of if you were to play a serial killer, right? If I were writing that script, a question that I would ask myself at some point is, how would the serial killer gain an advantage if somebody were to run up the stairs? How does a serial killer solve that problem or think through that problem in a wheelchair? And I think that is the kind of disability inclusion that I want to see. I want it to be natural. I want it to be organic. I want it to be real. And not every conversation has to be about disability specifically, but I want it to come up at least in subtext in ways like that.
Well, and I just like to clarify, like, I feel like I have this conversation all the time on my channel, and it's just like, again, I think there's a misunderstanding just because, you know, you want to be loud and proud. I mean, essentially the reason why I am the way I am and I formed Claiming Disability and our slogan is we wear disability like a badge of honor. So it might be like, we're talking about disability, disability, disability all the time. It's like, I'm disabled as hell. I use a walker. I roll into an interview. Everybody knows that I'm disabled as hell. And it's like, why aren't we allowed to flip the narrative into a positive? And that's the trend that I'm seeing in the disabled community. There's more people than ever who are part of the reclaim movement, who want to claim their disability, who want to say it is a bad. Because I grew up in an environment where I was told I was ugly, I was a worthless cripple, like that I had no value. So there's something really powerful about disabled people taking back the narrative, the reclaim movement, and saying, I'm disabled as hell. It's a part of my identity. No, it doesn't have to be the central storyline. You can still have awesome, hot, disabled women who run a sex toy shop with that's Handy Sex Toys. That is one of our sponsors. Like, you know, I mean, you can still have a really funny, great storyline that isn't centralized around disability, but to try to take it out of the picture, that's a no-go for me.
I think erasure is a huge part of that too. Like there, I think we've been ignored for so long. We as like disabled actors, disabled creators as a whole, just as a means to just quiet us and push us to the side, which led to the lack of representation we've all seen. For me, I became disabled at 22. I'm now 30. So when I was growing up, I grew up in upper middle class family, but my other part of my family lived in parts of Philadelphia that weren't so great back then. And I grew up always being taught to be grateful for the things that I have and know that my life is not like somebody I'm walking past the street in New York City as. So I think I'm very fortunate, but I think that everybody needs to have that exposure. And the fact that we can write these narratives and control them ourselves is so powerful. And Zach, going back to it, you said what we want our career legacy to be is just, I want to be somebody who's a stand for authenticity across the board, whether racially, religiously, disabled or non. I think that it's really important to tell everyone's story, and it's not just black and white. Like it's less than white. There's so many things that need to be done still. And I'm really happy to be a part of this group and change makers in general.
Yeah, and before I go, because I have to go do my 9 to 5, but you know, one of the things about like that Melanie brought up probably inadvertently is that she acquired some of her disabilities, which means that the story she tells about disability is going to be fundamentally different from mine, who was born with my disability, you know? So right. I feel like that's also authenticity in the disability community, because we do not have the same experience with disability. We do not have the same experience coming into disability or reclaiming our disability or even recognizing our disability. And that has to be, you know, shown in the diversity of the media that we create as well. And so like, you know, one of the things that I try to do is try to tell people like the disability community is not a monolith. It's not all one view. We're not all one color. We're not all one sexual orientation. We're not all one group in terms of how we got to our disability or how we will live through disability or how we will go through life with a disability. So I think that also needs to be reflected, because the fact of the matter is that Melanie and I have two very different, experiences with disability. Same as Samantha and I, same as Andy and I, same as Zach and I and Aaron. Like, we're not gonna have the same perspective. We're not gonna write the same way. We're not gonna develop characters in the same way. And I think we should respect that. Now, the only issue I have is that we should not be creating further stereotypes for other people in our community. That's a no-go for me. We already know what the stereotypes are. We don't have to break them down here and now. But that's the one thing that we should not be doing, is leaving a legacy of stereotypes that the next generation will have to unravel later on. That's where I draw the line. But other than that, go wild.
Love it.
But I'm going to go right now. But
to go to church.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you. And I'm going to have to go here soon, too. It is after 2. Is there anything?
Just so good, you know.
It was really good, and it flew by. I mean, it could go on for 5 more hours. I don't know that would be productive for my business.
Mine either.
So, do we want to wrap it by those of you that have not kind of said what you want to say with your career? That was it. Just, I don't know. Andy, did you say yours already? I don't believe Samantha has.
I think I said a convoluted version, but I'll just say a short version of what I think is really important. I want intersectionality to not be, oh, it's sexy now, let's do it. Let's have the gay, disabled, Latino.
I hope you enjoyed that amazing episode. I can't believe I actually got to be in the same Zoom as Imani Barberin. She is so ridiculously insightful. I love her so much. I'm so glad you guys listened to this episode. I have some new merch out that I just have for this month. Teach Disability History and Disability Pride is a Fluid Experience, which I think Imani covered really well when she was discussing the differences in the disabled experience that we need to portray on screen. So if you guys can check out my merch, I'd really appreciate it. If you can't support me in that way, that's fine. Just keep listening. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.